You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. We are back with the music spotlight, and this time we are looking at the Kinks. That's right, I think this was Mike Gordon's choice, so it's only appropriate that Mike Gordon's here to talk about it.
Howdy!
How are you, sir?
I am feeling kinky.
Are you?
Yes.
Well, of course. So are you a Davies or are you just a Kinkster?
Well, you know, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Well, it's always a good way to be, you know. It makes life just a little more interesting, as we like to say.
So Kinks are one of those weird bands that should be interesting to talk about, because they're a band that's not talked about a lot. So and you know, I know we're coming from this at an angle where we're, you know, we've all got our personal feelings about the band. So, you know, we don't claim to be experts. We're just having fun talking about the music.
No, and that's what we love doing on the show, is we never claim to be an expert on anything.
No.
We just like talking about different topics. And that's always been part of the fun. Enthusiasts. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to find, why did you choose the Kinks for this episode?
Well, because they're a band that I like a lot. I think they're a band that I find very interesting. I'm still discovering their albums that they've done over the years. They've got a huge album library, and they've been releasing 50th anniversary or remastered versions of a lot of their earlier albums, or sort of their middle period. Lately, and so I've been discovering them that way. I'm currently reading Ray Davies' second book, Americana. So, I mean, they've just been on my mind, and like I said, I don't think they're a band that a lot of people talk about, so I thought it'd be fun.
That is awesome, man, you know, because the Kinks have always been on my radar, but they've never been, like, one of my favorites. So it's going to be a lot of fun to talk all about that one, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, all the different people's opinions, who's sitting in with us tonight. So it should be a lot of fun, but we definitely would love to hear from you guys at home. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com. You know, we definitely would want to hear from you guys, especially with episode 500 coming up. We definitely, you know, hey, you know, if you guys have any thoughts or, you know, well wishes or anything you want, please send it to us at, you know, earthstation1@esonetwork.com. You send us MP3s. We definitely would love to hear it, and we'll play it on that episode. You know, if you have some nice things to say, hey guys, you can't believe you even made it to episode 500. That is just awesome. Or hey, I can't believe you made it to episode 500. You know, just depends on, you know, how you guys want to put it. So it's always a good thing. Well, we definitely would love to hear from you guys at home. So please, you know, send us. We'll have stuff up on Facebook. We'll have stuff up on social media, you know, just to remind you guys as episode 500 comes up. And we might have a couple surprises coming up with episode 500. And don't forget, that's coming up on the 20th of November. That's, you know, by the time this comes out on Friday to the general public, that's only a couple days away. So if you ever, you know, want to, you know, come see us live, Mike, where are we going to be?
We are going to be at Infinite Realities Comics and More. It is a new comic store, barely a year old, in Tucker, Georgia, voted by Creative Loafing readers as the best comic shop in Atlanta.
Woo! So it should be cool at 9 p.m., correct?
We plan on starting recording around 9, so plan on getting there a little bit before that and hanging out with us, helping us move table,
set up equipment. Should be a lot of fun.
Checks and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, exactly.
So it should be really good to see, and it should be fun to see whoever comes. And, you know, we're going to have a great discussion, and we're also going to be playing around with Facebook Live, so you'll be able to talk to us that way while we're recording, and should be, you know, even more exciting as Mike and Mike go into the 21st century, you know. So it should be kind of neat. A big shout out real quick to our patrons. Thank you guys very much for everything you guys do for us, for our support, for your love, for your, you know, feedback, for just listening and, you know, being part of, you know, the ESO network, which, you know, spun out of Earth Station One, you know, as we just grew and grew and grew, you know, that's where the network came from. And so it should be, you know, from the bottom of our hearts, you know, this is our baby. This is, you know, we're the flagship of the ESO network. And with, you know, your guys' support, it helps us get new equipment, get, you know, new, you know, ways to keep people to connect with us up on the podcast. It's always a great way to just, you know, be able to talk and, you know, other help our other shows too. So, you know, all you have to do for as little as 25 cents a week, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/ESO network. And, you know, all our shows, Earth Station One, Earth Station Who, when the Dragon Con report comes out, those three shows are given to the Patreons 48 hours early before the rest of the world hears them. So it gives you a little bit of an exclusive and a like head start. And, you know, it's we've been told by other people that they really do appreciate it. And so why not get it? It's all really easy and it helps support us and it's pretty darn cool. I think it's neat. So with that being said, we've got a musical episode for this one. And something I always wanted to talk to you about, Mike, what makes you want to go see live music? You know, you see a lot of, you know, whenever like Davy Knowles comes to town or, you know, you go see a concert, what makes you want to go see the certain artists and such?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that about what I look for in seeing a live act, because I was actually thinking about that this past weekend. I was at a concert that had some blues musicians, including someone that I've talked about before on this show. I'm a big fan of Davy Knowles, who is a blues musician out of England. He actually resides in Chicago area, but he's originally from England. And he's just one of the best guitarists, the best blues guitarist that's out there. You know, I can't safely say that, you know, he's the best guitarist out there, or the best guitarist ever, because I think guitar playing, just like any sort of instrument or even people who sing, et cetera, is a purely subjective experience. You know, I can listen to Davy play, and I've seen a lot of great guitarists. I mean, we're about to talk about the Kinks. I've seen Dave Davies play the guitar. He's one of the best guitarists on the planet. I've seen him play. I've seen Brian May play with Queen. I've seen Prince play. I've seen Neil Young play. I've seen a lot of great folks play the guitar over the years. But I'll tell you what, when Davy plays, it just hits me in my soul, is what I can only describe it as. It connects. I connect with it on a level that's like unlike anybody else, and it almost brings me to tears sometimes. And I know, Mike, that you can testify to this, because I know that you've seen me at Davy Knowles' show, and I can get quite emotional.
You go into a whole nother world when that happens, man. It's just like you're like floating like an inch off the ground, and you're like almost like you're flowing to the music. It's really awesome to see.
But isn't that what you look for too when you see a live act? You want that connection.
Oh, you totally want to connect with the artists up there on stage, either if it's at a music festival or if it's someplace like 100-person concert hall. It's just amazing to be able to see stuff like that, and then to, you know, take it to, you know, the next level, and, you know, just, you know, just feed in with the whole band. It's just awesome.
And look, I mean, you know, you can spend a lot of money seeing Queen, seeing the Eagles come back on their
55th comeback tour.
Exactly, they're still touring.
I know, it's just crazy.
But, you know, and those ticket prices are insane, you know. But I think certainly right now in selecting concerts that I want to go to, because I'm getting older. That was proof of this weekend. I'm definitely getting older. And as I get older, I realize that a lot of the shows that I've seen over the years, I don't remember. You know, I can tell you I was there. I can even tell you maybe a song or two that they played, but in a lot of cases, I'm just like, oh yeah, I saw them, but I don't really recall that. And I'm like, wow, I spent whatever it was, however much money I spent on that show, and yet here it is years later, and I can't remember it. It's like, that doesn't seem like money well spent. So, and as I get older,
well, a lot of times though, it always feels like they run into each other.
Kind of, yeah.
And I think that's a sign of a good show, though.
Too. Yeah, exactly. I think also that, you know, I mean, as I get older, it's just like, it's a pain to go downtown. It's a pain to park. It's a pain to do this, that, and the other thing. Obviously, ticket prices are expensive these days. So it's kind of like you have to be more selective. So this day and age, if there's an artist that I feel a connection to, like Davey, like I will see him every time he comes close, every time he comes around. And if there's artists that are out there that I'm like, you know what, I've never seen them, and it looks like this might be their last chance to see them because everybody's getting older, I will try to take that opportunity as well. I mean, I think that's a big concern nowadays.
We call it our bucket list of people who we want to see before they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, this might be the last time they tour, or this might be the last time they come around. It's just like, you know, you just don't know. And, you know, so we make special exceptions for that. You know, that's why, you know, people go, why do you go see all these old people? And it's like, because they're classics and, you know, they might not be able to tour. And you get to say, I saw so-and-so, you know, type thing.
So, and a lot of times it's, you know, they still can play, you know, I mean, it's not, you know, I don't know. I don't think that there's, I mean, it's not like, you know, when you're watching wrestling, you know, if you're watching pro wrestling and a guy's like our age in the ring, you're kind of like, oh, that's not going to be a great performance. But, you know, I've seen guys that are almost twice my age now, 100 years old play, and they're amazing. So it's I don't think you can put like an age requirement on musicians. I mean, certainly some are better than others, but I still have a list of folks that, yes, I hope at some point I get to see. That list is smaller and smaller as, of course, the years go on. But, you know, I think and otherwise, yeah, like I said, there's some people that I feel, like I said, I feel a connection to that haven't around. I mean, we live in, you know, we live in a pretty metropolitan city, but it's amazing how many bands and how many acts do not come to Atlanta for whatever reason.
Oh, exactly. There's huge, huge tours and they just pass the South by, or they skip Atlanta and they go down to like Orlando or Miami or Nashville, you know, all areas not that far from us, but it's like they pass right by us. And that's kind of heartbreaking. So that does happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, is that sort of similar to your experience? I mean, what is there anything in particular that you look for when you're, I mean, cause you and Judy go to a lot of bands too, probably more music than we do.
It depends. You know, our musical tastes have evolved over the years where, you know, we go, you know, we don't go see tons of like popular big stadium bands and everything, like the Eagles or, you know, stuff like that. Or we didn't even go see Queen when they came. We tried to go see, you know, we try to go see a lot of bands, you know, a lot of smaller venues, and go see, you know, a lot of what they call Newgrass, or we go see, you know, like pure up rock bands, or we go see a lot of the classics. And it just all depends, you know, on money or time and money, you know. But it's just like, you know, of course every couple of weeks it's like, oh, look what they just announced, oh, we're gonna go see, bands like the Avett Brothers, or we're going to go see, you know, the Lumineers, or we're going to go see, you know, Railroad Earth, or, you know, bands like that. And I love it because the passion and the energy of going to see these people and seeing them, you know, maybe, you know, be maybe like 20 feet away from these people, not having to be three balconies up or something like that. That also, you know, is pretty darn awesome. And, you know, it's just a lot of fun. And it just is, for me, you know, it's experience. And, you know, then going to music festivals and discovering brand new artists and, you know, finding bands, you know, you might have heard like once or twice on the radio, and going to see, you know, see them live there. It's just awesome. And, you know, that's even more special. You know, it's being outside on a field and going to see, you know, bands in a stage, and it's just awesome, you know. And in my head, it's like, hey, I wonder if this is what Woodstock was like. You know, it's kind of fun, you know.
He's still not getting over Woodstock. I guess when you go to Woodstock, when one of your earliest concert memories is going to one of the biggest live festivals that's ever been in the history of the planet, I guess that kind of spoils you to a concert for life after that.
Oh, of course. You have to basically, you know, it's
trying,
you know,
to recreate that. You spent your entire life trying to recreate that.
We had hoped to be able to pass that on to William and everything, you know, the experience. And, you know, a lot of it was, you know, with him, you know, he couldn't handle all that much going to like festivals and stuff, but he went to go see a lot of concerts with us, and sometimes it was kicking and screaming, but he'd appreciate it afterwards. So, but that's the way my parents did it with me. So
bring him dragging and screaming.
Exactly. So, it's pretty awesome.
I don't know. I mean, as I'm getting older too, the festival thing does wear and tear on me. I will say, like, I haven't done a lot of festivals, but that's a lot of like commitment, and it's tough. I'm eyeing a couple of them, and I'm not done with them, but whew, that's a tough thing to spend all day. That's at a venue with bands. That's listening. That's hard for me to do. Like, yeah, that's hard.
Well, of course. It's interesting though, because for us, it's like we already have plans for go to Floyd Fest in late summer of 2020. And, you know, that's driving all the way up to Southern Virginia and, you know, going to see bands up there. And it's just a lot of fun. Sure. And we haven't done it in the last couple of years because of Judy's health. And we're actually looking forward to getting back on the horse, as we like to say. So it's kind of cool. So
And, you know, I have to also say too, you know, as fun as seeing like, you know, bands that are on my bucket list are, there's a lot of like local bands that are just fun. There's a lot of talent out there, and not all of them are, not even like most of them are like hugely successful. Like, there's so many talented people. One of the guys that we saw over the weekend that is a great blues musician is, his day job is a bus driver. He's been doing that for 30 years. You know, we're about to talk to have our good friends Ricky and Bambi on. Ricky and Bambi are amazing to see live. They're so good and they have so much fun. And that's another thing I think that's key to going to shows, especially over and over again. If the band looks like they're having a good time, if they tend to have a good time, then that's a great experience that you want to do over and over again.
Well, exactly. And that's part of the thing that you want to experience is, you know, seeing these new, I won't say like Ricky and Bambi are new because they've been doing this for years, you know, but it's just awesome. So it's just, you know, it's great when you can get to do that and to have the experience and being able to see these people and say, hey, I saw these guys, you know, when, you know, Judy tells me stories about when she saw REM, you know, in Athens before their first album came out, you know, type stuff. And, you know, It's just pretty cool.
Yeah, it's one thing to see like the young up and coming bands before they get quote unquote big, but also it's cool to see these people that have been playing for decades, and yeah, they're not going to be, you know, they're not probably going to get to that huge level, but yet they're really, really good at what they do, and they're doing it because they love it. Yeah, they're, you know, being an independent musician in this day and age is kind of very similar to being like an independent writer or an independent comic book maker or any independent creator. It's just doing their thing, and you know they're doing it because they love it, and that is I think telling. I mean, because if someone's doing it because they love it, then I think that's worth checking out.
Exactly. And you know, definitely check out local music in your areas, and folks, please give it a try. It'd be well worth it of your time. With that being said, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment, and we are talking all about the Kinks.
Hi, this is Ashley Pault with this week's Box Office Buzz. The biggest movie in theaters this weekend, or at least the one I'm personally most looking forward to, is called Ford vs. Ferrari. Now, a movie about car racing wouldn't normally be my cup of tea necessarily, but this is one of those movies where I saw the trailer and thought, oh my gosh, I have to see this. This looks so interesting. It's based on a true story of an American car designer and a British driver who are trying to help Ford Motor Company beat the legendary Ferrari race cars. It's got a really cool cast led by Matt Damon and Christian Bale, and I'm really looking forward to seeing it in IMAX this weekend. Already have my ticket. Can't wait to see it. We also have the reboot of Charlie's Angels about the globe-trotting spies. Now, I'm a person who doesn't necessarily think that reboots are always a bad idea. I think that there are older movies that it's worth revisiting, kind of bringing a modern lens to these stories, seeing how we can kind of translate some of these characters and ideas into an updated time. The trailers for this one didn't necessarily grab me, though, so it looks like one that might be kind of fun to catch on streaming, but I'm not necessarily going to be rushing out to the theaters to see this one. Finally, we've got a drama thriller called The Good Liar, and it's about a con artist played by Ian McKellen who just might get conned himself by a character played by Helen Mirren. Now, of course, the main draw of this is seeing two legendary actors like Ian McKellen and Helen Mirren on screen together. The trailer for this one is interesting. I'm not quite sure what vibe I'm getting from it. Maybe a little bit of crime undertone and even a little bit of horror. It looks really intriguing, though, so this is one that I might end up checking out eventually. And again, just if not to see Ian McKellen and Helen Mirren on screen together. And that's it for this week. If you're looking for more entertainment-related content, be sure to check out my blog over on the ESO Podcast website.
Look, we know it's a long time till Doctor Who comes back on the air.
Sorry.
But your friends here at the Earth Station Who Podcast are here to help.
That's right. Mike, and Mary will be your guide through this wilderness year with reviews of classic stories, audios, and even some group discussions featuring some special guests.
Join us for new episodes every other week up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
The Earth Station Who Podcast, exploring over 50 years of the Doctor Who universe.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Earth Station 1. Now it is time for our music segment. And this time out, we are looking at the Kinks.
Yes, it's time for us to get kinky, sort of, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Oh, I was waiting for that to happen.
And of course, we have with us our usual crew here for the music spotlights. Michelle is here.
Hello.
Representing the iconic rock moments, right? Yep. Which the Kinks have many of, I think.
They do.
And we also have Ricky and Bambi joining us.
Hello.
Oh, wow. As in stereo. Very nice. Very cool. You guys doing all right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you ready? Are you ready to rock?
We're always ready to rock.
Well, as we usually start off, the Kinks, we'll just find out where, like how everybody got introduced to the Kinks. Kinks have been around since 1964, which I think predates almost all of us, right? So, yeah. So at some point we must have run across them. Let's start with you, Bambi. Where did you first encounter the Kinks?
To be honest, I had no clue who the Kinks were until I heard Van Halen's You Really Got Me.
That's fair.
Wow.
That was a cover song.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I think, you know, I think actually did that for a whole generation with the Kinks and with Roy Orbison, right? When they did Pretty Woman, their cover of that. Like they actually introduced a whole new generation to those songs, I think. Yeah. I don't think they acknowledged who they were, like who did the originals, but certainly I think that might have been the first time I was aware of those songs in particular. Ricky, what about you?
Well, for me, I think it's been a situation of for many, many years, I'll have heard a song a number of times and then somebody will say, oh, you know, that's the Kinks. And no, I had no idea that was the Kinks. So I know all this music by the Kinks that's just always been around and I've never known it was them.
Mm. They, and we'll probably talk about this, but they did go through some changes as a band over the decades, which I think was kind of interesting. They changed their style a little bit. I mean, there's still, I think if you're, you know, a Kinks purist or whatever, you kind of can follow them and still there's, I think the Ray Davies sound in particular is pretty unmistakable, but yet there's a lot of different kinds of songs that they have, I think. Michelle?
Growing up, I heard, you know, the singles. Of course, I heard Lola, Come Dancing, Destroyer.
Yes.
But I didn't know the albums and didn't really know the story until I went with you to see see Ray at the Tabernacle here in Atlanta and experience his one-man storytelling show.
Yes, that was amazing. Both of us have seen Dave and Ray separately,
yes,
but we've never seen the Kinks together. Yeah, we've never seen them together as the Kinks. So, and yeah, they are as separate as brothers can get, I think, at this point.
It doesn't get much more so.
Mike, what about you?
Same as Michelle, actually. You know, my parents, you know, raised me on the Kinks and, you know, all the different British Invasion music, you know, but for us, the Beatles caught on more than the Kinks did and such. But it was really awesome, you know, Lola. And then, you know, as I got older, you know, Destroyer and, you know, You Really Got Me and, you know, stuff like that. And then, you know, really feeling them when MTV era and I was a teenager and Come Dancing, you know, the video came out and it was like, oh, okay. And that really, you know, pushed it out. And then I researched as I got older and started my own musical taste, you know, discovering more of the Kinks history and everything and doing it that way.
Yeah. I'm very similar to that. Actually. I was aware. I don't even think I knew of them as a band. Like I knew the singles, like I knew You Really Got Me and I knew Destroyer was huge back in the day. Like when I was in like junior high or high school, somewhere mm-hmm. in that, like Destroyer was everywhere. You don't hear that one very often anymore, I think. Or people, a lot of that doesn't seem to come up with a lot of other ones that they like people harp on. But I mean, I remember back in the day, like we all knew that one. But it wasn't until I guess you could say it really literally didn't put a face with the band until Come Dancing and seeing that video. And by that time I was already pretty established as really enjoying like English stuff, like English, like Doctor Who and Monty Python and all that kind of stuff. So seeing the video, which was very kind of tongue in cheek, you know, Ray was the kind of like showman, in that. I think it just hit me, and I was like, oh, this is a band to watch. And I still really didn't like go all in. I didn't buy their albums or do anything like that until I got really into them in college. A really good friend of mine who actually listened to the show, so thank you, Larry, in college introduced
our seventh listener. Awesome.
Yes, exactly. He's listener number seven. He really was a big fan of the Kinks, and he was really digging their stuff from like the 80s, really. And kind of what I'm going to call their third version of the band, really. If you break it out. And that's when I really started getting in. An album that they came out with. Are you there?
Yeah, you broke for a second. That's all.
Okay.
You froze up.
There was an album that they came out with in particular called, I think it was one of their last albums called UK Jive, which we listened to over and over and over again. And, just really liked that a lot. So, cause I think really when I think about the band, there's three eras in their history that I think that I kind of put in. There's like 64 to 69 ish or so, where they're coming out with like singles like You Really Got Me and All Day and All the Night, Set Me Free, Tired of Waiting for You, kind of stuff.
Can you imagine though, during that era, if they didn't get banned from the United States from playing concerts? Can you imagine how big they could have been here in the States?
I don't know, because I mean, that's a weird thing, because there no one can really kind of pinpoint exactly why they were banned.
Oh, they were banned. Or they were banned because they kept on getting into fights on stage. And
no, that's absolutely not true. That's absolutely not true.
People would not book them. And that's when the people decided that, you know, in the United States, because they were throwing, you know, drums at each other and cymbals, and one of, you know, Ray got knocked out on stage by the drummer, you know, and it's just, and then to convince them not to press charges, they basically had to say, oh, it's part of the act. So no, there was a lot that they, you know, reasons why they got banned in the States.
Mm-hmm. Well, the big fights you're talking about did not happen in the States.
One of them was right in Alabama, dude.
most of the stuff I think though, the thing that makes them endearing is the fact that even right from the beginning, even in their own country, they weren't like a huge success right away. I mean, they had the first big songs like, you know, All Day and All the Night and You Really Got Me. But then after that, they kind of, they found it hard to get their stuff played on even British radio. And then they started to build up a following in 69 or so in the States. And actually they were, at one point, they were more popular in the States than they were in Britain.
Oh yeah, definitely. But Ray Davies had to come back with his manager, and they basically had, this was right before they did that concert you had been talking about over at, you know, when they were doing, you know, like, the ones in New York and then in San Francisco and stuff like that. They basically had to go and like reapply to play here in the States. And, you know, they had to like, you know, like say, hey, we promise we won't do this kind of stuff anymore. And, you know, these are, you know, some, this is, you know, we'll behave, but they never did, but that's a whole different story. Cause the whole music industry at that point had changed from, you know, the proper, you know, British invasion guys in the suits and everything and the mop tops to, you know, the acid rock and stuff of the late 60s.
But they were just, you know, I think they themselves were odd, the two, and they didn't fit in. Like when the Beatles came over, when the British invasion came over and the Beatles came over, and you're right, they were all well-dressed mop tops, very like boy next door-ish, you know. The Kinks were not. Like whenever Ray and Dave and the rest of them would be talking to the press, they would kind of be saying just the wrong thing. The press didn't know what to make of them. So yes, they did not make a good impression on America. And I think that did hurt them, but I don't know, you know, it's one of those things that I think that just sort of fed into their own drama as far as creativity wise. I mean, like Ray Davies has never really fit in. And in some ways, I don't even know if he's fit into his own band at some points, you know? Although I've read both of his books, or I'm actually halfway through the second book of his, and he constantly refers to the Kinks as his band. And of course that really ticks off his brother Dave, like to no end. And Ray had stuff in his contract that basically said that off of any Kinks album, the first three singles had to be ones that were written by him. So even though Dave wrote quite a number of songs, none of them really got any traction, because by the time the fourth single comes out, right? But so you have this period where in the 60s, they're doing these like singles, they're doing these rock singles. And then in the late 60s, they start to get into more concept albums, like the Village Green Preservation Society, Arthur, Muswell Hillbillies, things like that. Preservation 1 and 2. These are like high concept albums, which are critically acclaimed, but they really don't like produce a lot of singles. And it isn't until I think they sign with Arista Records in 70s where they start kind of doing hits again. So I don't know. I don't know what you guys' experiences with the band are per se, but in terms of like, is there a particular era of the Kinks that you like more than say maybe the others, or that you kind of identify more with? Bambi?
I guess me, I really like, without knowing much about them, it would have just been that you really got me mostly. But like, because of this podcast, what you guys were saying, we're going to be doing stuff on the Kinks. I looked them up and I was shocked that I was actually familiar with so many of the songs that they actually had. And I was like, these are completely different bands. It sounds like from You Really Got Me to Lola sounds like a completely different band.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, me personally, I guess it still would be You Really Got Me, because I tend to like rock, you know, more rock based stuff. But I don't know, the what was it, Come Dancing, is it that one?
Yeah,
that sounds very, is that 80s? It sounds very 80s.
Yeah, that's early 80s.
Yeah, it sounds kind of ska-ish. So I don't know, I guess I don't really feel like I can choose properly, because it feels like a different band to me.
And that's the cool thing. They kept on reinventing themselves. And they also, you know, the two brothers were the only constant through the band the whole time. They, you know, everyone else changed around them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so that also brought in.
They would kick them out.
Oh, yeah. Or they quit. People quit. Or
and Dave quit many times. But he always came back as well. I mean, it was weird. They were literally like the bad brothers. I mean, yes, they did fight a lot.
They're still better than Oasis, so that's all I have to say.
They're better. Actually, they're better fighters than Oasis was. And they're probably, yeah, they're, yeah. So even Oasis, yeah, Oasis even took that from them. Like, they're like, they sound like the Beatles and they fight like the Kinks. Ricky, what about you? Any particular like era that that appeals to you about the Kinks?
Well, I'm not really familiar with the concept album era at all. So what I know from them is the singles, and most of the singles that I'm familiar with are the early era. So when I think of the Kinks, I think of the early stuff.
Yeah. They have, according to Wikipedia, they had 5 top 10 singles in the US Billboard chart. 9 of their albums charted in the top 40. In the UK, they had 17 top 20 singles and 5 top 10 albums. So, yeah, they had, especially in the UK, they had a number of singles that, you know, made an impression. But sort of, and I will say this too, as much as I like the Kinks, I like their early stuff. I'm more, I think, partial to their later stuff, just because that's what I am really familiar with. And just recently, only over the last year or so, have I been really getting into their their concept album period. Mm-hmm. This year is the 50th anniversary of their album Arthur. And they've of course put out a huge, you know, multi-set of that. Last year was the 50th anniversary of Village Green Preservation Society, and they've been doing the same thing. So I imagine next year they'll do the same thing for Lola versus Power Man, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a good time to be to discover these albums, because they're actually remastering them and becoming more available than they were for a while. So I'm kind of curious. I'm kind of discovering them when it comes to that period. I mean, I know certain songs, like on Arthur. I think the most popular song off that was Victoria, which I don't know.
It's a great song.
Yeah. Michelle, what about you?
I'm going to think of them as a 60s band. You got me, really got me. Lola, that period. I know them as a singles band.
Gotcha. And Mike?
Well, you know, for me, it's probably, you know, 70s. You know, I like their 60s stuff, you know, the first couple of years. But then for me, it was like the 70s when you got into Lola, you got into Celluloid Heroes, you know, you got Walking on a Thin Line. You know, that whole era of the Kinks is so deep. It's just awesome. You know, actually, Celluloid Heroes almost like brings me to tears sometimes. It's just such a beautiful song.
That's one of my favorite songs as well. That's off of Everybody's in Show Business. Mm-hmm. Everybody's in Showbiz, in kind of around the. It's kind of weird. That album is a kind of a standout with the. They're doing concept albums in the 70s, but that one is more of a singles album, I think, to me mm-hmm. anyway.
I can see that. Yeah.
That's that song in particular. They also have one that's they would do these. They're not really ballads, but they're kind of ballads in the sense that you've got Celluloid Heroes. You've got there's one, I think, about Where Have All the Good Times Gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's one about rock and roll, which I'm not.
Rock and Roll Fantasy.
Yes, that's it exactly. Rock and Roll Fantasy,
yeah.
Which is like that's almost like the rock and roll equivalent of Celluloid Heroes in a way to me. But I love those songs. So why I'm
those
I'm
are kind great of great songs. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what really strikes me about the Kinks in particular, well, first of all, it's said that their first huge single, which was You Really Got Me, was a game changer, not just for them, but for rock and roll.
Oh yeah. The distortion.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Now, Bambi, since you mentioned it, do you know that? Can you explain that a little bit?
It's they cut a hole, I think, or they slit the speaker to make it rattle. Kind of. I mean, it's probably the short answer of it. It's distortion. It's like a blown speaker kind of distortion.
Yeah, it was something that Dave did to one of his, I think, homemade speakers that he used at home or whatever. And it gave his guitar this sort of, I guess, is it called like crunchy now? Like this crunch sound?
Well, it's distortion. It's
right.
Well, yeah.
It's crunchy. Yeah. Crunch.
And it was just this raw, like guitar noise that I don't think anybody had heard before. And I think some people go so far as to say that this was the start of like heavy rock.
Yeah.
Like you could almost link like heavy metal to like this song in the sort of family tree of rock. And I certainly think that, you know, and I think they also attribute punk to them as well from that.
Well, it wasn't the first song that used that sound.
Mm-hmm.
It's a famous example, but, mm-hmm. the one of the earliest recordings of that, the story is that the amplifier had fallen out of the trunk that wasn't latched well and broke on the way to the studio, and they didn't have a chance to fix the speaker, so they just recorded with a broken speaker and ended up having distortion. And that wasn't the Kinks, that predated the Kinks. Gotcha. So this wasn't the first example, but it was definitely an early example, not just because of the distortion, but because of the aggression of the song.
Yes. I think the combination of You Really Got Me and then All Day and All of the Night, because they're very similar in their like aggressive guitar riffs, I think.
Yes.
So much so that if I find myself, even me, I find myself humming one and I'll slip into the other. Like, it just seems like they're like, which one is that way? Like this massive guitar riff. But I think that was a big, huge, yeah, influence. And then what was weird is like the next singles that they came out with were Set Me Free and Tired of Waiting for You, which are completely like not like raw, like heavy rock songs. So right away, they kind of like change up a little bit as far as what people are expecting from them. I think in one of the books, I know that... I think it's Ray who mentions that at one point in the, I guess it would be the late 60s, he was listening to the radio and a Who song came on. It was like when Who was first coming out and stuff. And he was like, oh, I don't remember recording that Kink song. and then he realized it wasn't his band. So yeah, I guess the Who was influenced by the Kinks as well. But I think you could make that lineage between, you know, like there was the Beatles and the Stones at the time. They were the two icons of sort of British rock. But then you have the Kinks coming in, which is sort of like more like the fringe, the heavy metal or the punk of rock instead of the pop rock or the standard rock that the bluesy standard rock mm-hmm. that the Stones would give. So it's kind of a weird like kind of mix there. And I find that I think that's another reason why the Kinks never really got like huge was because I think they just weren't, I don't think they were made up for that. I don't think they were, I don't think that was in their DNA to be like America's band or UK's band or a huge pop sensation like that.
Well, I think it's interesting. You mentioned the Stones and the Beatles. The Stones have the reputation of being kind of the bad boys of rock at the time.
Sure.
Oh yeah.
The Beatles were the clean cut. Well, the Beatles and the Dave Clark Five were sort of the clean cut guys. And then you had the Stones who were, you know, the sort of the bad boys. But as far as I know, they weren't, you know, throwing drums at each other on stage. So maybe that title was, given to the wrong band.
Well, it was the Stones were, I mean, Keith Moon was throwing things like out of hotel windows,
but that was later.
That was later, right?
But they weren't, And I think, you know, and then certainly when the Who came around, they started smashing guitars on the stage, but they weren't like aggressive towards one another. I mean, this was the Kinks were a band that not only were Dave and Ray fighting, but Dave was fighting with Mick was fighting with, like, they were all kind of fighting with one another.
Oh, and they, when they you just say didn't fighting, like each you other. Don't mean arguing, you mean punching each other in the face in the middle of a show.
Exactly. And hitting each other with instruments, you know.
Yes, yes. I mean, how much more punk, I mean, that's why I think they're attributed to the starting like punk, is how much more punk can you get? That's like the early days of punk for sure. But I think the other thing about that is that, which is a weird dichotomy, because I think in addition to the riffs and everything, to me, what really pulls me in to the Kinks is the songwriting, particularly the songwriting from Ray, although Dave's got some really good numbers too. But really, Ray's songwriting is just, it's clever. It's impactful. A lot of times he'll use a double meaning in a lot of tracks, a lot of social political things that he brings up. some in a very cheeky fashion, others in a lot more of a sort of a sentimental fashion. I think that what's to me when I'm looking back now, there's the rock numbers, sure, but then the numbers that I keep coming back to and listening to, as Mike mentioned with Celluloid Heroes, is the songwriting.
He also had a bit of snark in his songwriting.
Yes.
Which goes back to what you were saying about punk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think you can. I mean, I think one of the biggest hits, like Lola, is a good example of that, right?
Where I don't know how punk it is, but it's a
good example. I mean, as far as Ray being kind of sort of matter of fact or snarky about something, or talking about something that wasn't really something that you would hear about on the radio very often.
Then. Yes. Yeah.
You know, that's
definitely the case.
Or dedicated follower of fashion is another one. Ape Man is another one. You know, I think he would come up with these songs. Lola, Ape Man. That's one of those ones I'm thinking of. Yeah, Dead End Street, even to a little bit. Even back in like their one of their earliest singles, I think Tired of Waiting for You is kind of, to me, a song that when I listen to it, I'm like, it just seems like you just didn't hear that kind of, like, what a weird kind of thing to sing about. I'm just tired of waiting for you. Like, I am just tired of waiting for you. I'm so tired. I do find that there's a little bit of that English humor, that dry English humor in the music too. Any other albums or songs in particular that you guys can relate to or like in particular?
Oh, there's a few of them. You know, it's just, it's always neat because it did feel like, especially through the 70s into the early 80s, the Kinks were reinventing themselves with each album. And it was always fun to see what they would come up with. And, you know, they didn't have all the top, you know, hit after hit after hit after hit. They went like on waves and such. Like you had said earlier, Mike, they didn't have, you know, hits for quite a few years. And then they, you know, reinsurged themselves. And that was pretty awesome about them.
It's always crazy when you see that with a band. The vast majority of bands out there never have any success. And of those that do have success, it's usually all at one time. You have this burst of popularity that lasts a few months, or if they're lucky, a few years. And then it goes away, and that's just it. And it might come back 20 years later when there's a nostalgia thing, but it's just a nostalgia for those same songs that were already hits. It's really rare that a band disappears and then comes back and has new hits that have nothing to do with the old music. And they did that several times.
Well, exactly. And that's one of the great things about it. Like, that's why they call it, you know, the one hit wonders and such, because you have like so many people who have like critically claimed first albums. They have hits and they have stuff. And the Kinks did that. They did that back in 1964, 65. But then, you know, in All Right, they should have disappeared, but they kept on coming back and coming back and coming back. And that's very, very rare.
Right.
Yeah.
And even so much so that, you know, when they're very rare that they made the transition, they made the transition to video. Like, they're a band that's around in the 60s. And then they're still around in the 80s, and they come out with a video for Come Dancing, which is just as popular as, like, you know, all the new bands at the time.
Oh, it was not
popular in a nostalgia way at all. It wasn't popular because, oh, it's the Kinks. They have a new video out. I like it because it's the Kinks. It was people saying, oh, I like this song from this new band.
Yeah,
exactly. But the thing is, after Come Dancing, that was it for them. You know, there wasn't, that was pretty much for their major top 40 popularity and such. You know, they had a couple that, you know, kind of peaked in the low top 40s and stuff, but they didn't go to the success that they found top Come Dancing was pretty much the pinnacle of the 80s for them.
That's true. Having hits in three different decades, I mean,
that's impressive.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing. And that's why we're talking about them tonight. You know?
Yeah.
So
that's, it definitely, yeah, you're right. It was, yeah, they did, like, you know, they were actually, I mean, they were around for another 10 years after that, making albums. But you're right, Mike. No, a lot of people cared.
Exactly.
I mean, I love those albums. State of Confusion, Think Visual, UK Jive. I like those albums a lot. But yeah, you're right. They weren't getting a lot of play.
They might have been successful for Kink fans, but they weren't, you know, commercial successes.
Yeah.
Because I can remember, you know, when the video started, it was all about, like, the sort of the new bands that were able to use that to their advantage. And then some of the older bands were able to adjust, like the Stones. But the Stones have sort of been that constant, right? Like, they've just been around.
Oh, yeah. But you still,
not going anywhere. They're just still a band, right? But it wasn't until, like, the Kinks did it that I think you could really see that other band, like, it paved the way for other bands to do it. Because I think it was shortly after that where the Moody Blues kind of made a comeback too.
The Moody Blues did, but you also had, you know, like, people like Jethro Tull, or you had, you know, definitely you had, you know, a lot of the 70s, 60s, and 70s band. You had Fleetwood Mac, you know, do, you know, come back, very popular in the 80s. You had, you know, a lot of those bands. Hell, you had the Grateful Dead. You had Springsteen, who, you know, was a mainstay in the 70s for the arena shows and, you know, his, you know, marathons. And I remember when Dancing in the Dark came out, that was such a, you know, so exciting, because that was Bruce's first real video he did. You know, he did one for Nebraska with Atlantic City, but he wasn't in it. But, you know, but that was it, you know, type thing.
It really made, you know, that people might have been excited for Bruce, Mike, but I think people were more excited because it made, you know, Courtney Cox a star.
Oh, yes, totally. I will never forget those dances.
Those dance moves, man. Oof. Look out, Michael Jackson at the time. Sorry. They're still a band. They're still around in the 90s. And then in 1990 is when they're inducted in the Hall of Fame. All four original members go in, even though, as you said, Mike, there was some guys that came and went in the band. But it was pretty much, at least most of them, are Dave, Ray, and I think Mick, right? Is the one I'm thinking of?
I think so.
And then I'm not sure who the fourth member was that was inducted in, but I'm guessing, I mean, do we know they must have got in, like, first ballot, right?
That would be my guess. Yeah.
Oh, I'd almost guarantee it.
I mean, they didn't go right in as soon as they were eligible, because they would have been like, they would have been like the first ones in. But, I think they were, I can't imagine it being a question like, oh, do we put these guys in or not? And they keep them, they're pretty, that's the other thing about the Kinks too, is that, even though Dave and Ray still tour, or they did, I think Dave still tours now, Ray, not so much. There's been talk over the last year or so that they're actually putting together some new music, or at least finishing up some old Kinks tunes.
Huh.
So there may be a Kinks album, coming out on the horizon at some point. What that's going to look like, I have no idea. Ray's written two books, kind of explaining about or talking about his time in the band. The first book is X-Ray. It's very strange the way it's written. It's almost like a fictional account of a rock and roller that's based heavily on Ray's experiences. It's very strange in the format. You're not surprised that Ray would do this, but. In the book, I guess he said a lot of things that Dave took exception to. So Dave wrote his own book called Kink. And then after that, Ray wrote another book to refute all the things that David says.
because they got to fight in, you know, literary circles too.
So, and even though I think they're cordial to one another at this point, they're not friendly. They live in, I think, they don't live anywhere near each other. Apart from this new stuff that they've been working on, they don't work together. They're completely separate, really. I know that I think when Ray recently was he knighted?
Yes, he was.
So it's Sir Ray Davies. Sorry, we've been... didn't mean to be disrespectful to Sir Ray, the knight of the realm.
and Dave tweeted about that.
Dave did, but he wasn't there.
Yeah, he wasn't there.
But it's not like he was there to say like, "Hey, bro." Of course, he and you know, I don't think he cared about being knighted either.
Yeah.
So,
of course not.
But as far as musically goes, I know that we like to ask you this, Ricky and Bambi, have you played Kink songs? Is it something that when you were doing covers that you get asked to do?
That's story time, right, Ricky?
It is story time. yes, we have played Kink's covers. In fact, many years ago, we had recorded a live version of us performing You Really Got Me. And I contacted their record label, to find out what it would cost for us to include that video on our DVD. Most people probably don't realize this. It's very easy to get permission and pay the mechanical licensing to do a cover of a song and put it on an album. Super, super easy. Not ridiculously expensive. And you don't even need to get permission. All you have to do is pay in most cases. But video is a completely different story. And it's a lot more difficult and it's a lot more expensive. So I had contacted the record label just to get a rough idea of how expensive we're talking about. And out of the blue, Dave Davies contacted me and said he wanted to see the video. And he said, I don't have anything to do with how much it costs. I don't have anything to do with giving you permission. I have nothing to do with any of that. I'd just like to see the video just because I'm curious. So it was kind of an ordeal getting it to him. It was a huge file. And like I said, this was a long time ago. And anyone who knows me knows that I am not very technologically savvy. So, and neither is Dave Davies, turns out.
That's awesome.
Between the two of us, it was a little bit of a challenge, but I finally did get this video to him, and he watched it and he said to me, "You guys are a lot of fun. I love your show. You put on a great show. It's too bad you got all the lyrics wrong."
because
we were doing a cover of Van Halen's version. But I still thought that it was just kind of shocking to be contacted by the song, one of the original songwriters, out of the blue about, you know, this song that decades later he's just curious to see this band performing it live.
That's amazing. Wow. Yeah, that is really cool. The fact that Dave would, I can't imagine that Ray would care, but although Ray would, it's oddly enough, Ray would be the one that's getting paid, because I think he's listed as the writer of almost all those songs.
Just send the checks.
And as an interesting side note to that story, the record label did tell me how much it would cost to put it on our DVD. And when they told me that, we immediately decided it was not going on our DVD. yet still, without any DVD release at all, including the song or not including the song, we had not even released a DVD. And the record label never contacted us about it again, but they turned over our account to a collections agency and still wanted that money, even though we never released a DVD at all.
Really?
I jumped through so so many hoops, so many angry phone calls trying to get that taken care of. The moral to that story, kids, is never give any contact information to a record label when you're just calling about a price quote.
Yeah, really.
Wow.
I also know from the readings of all the books, the one thing that Dave and Ray can agree on is that record label wise, they got screwed many, many times.
They're not alone there.
That's true.
Name a band they've been screwed. Come on. That's the truth.
But I think that was another reason that early on kind of caused them to stumble, because their management was awful, had really just taken advantage of them. And and it seems like they're, you know, those companies are still trying to make life hard for even people who are trying to cover them.
Yep.
Wow. So is that the main song now? But you said that when you cover that song, you're covering more you find that more people are familiar with the Van Halen version than the Kinks version of it?
Well, that's actually an interesting question. At our shows, yes, but we play mostly 80s music. So the people who come to our shows are mostly familiar with 80s music.
Gotcha.
Interestingly, I was teaching that song to students who were teenagers at the School of Rock last year. They weren't familiar with either version of the song. And the version that they were learning was the Kinks song for a British Invasion show that they were doing last year. So when I played them the Van Halen version and said, you know, there's a cover of this song that was also really popular and really well known. When I played the Van Halen song, these are teenagers now who heard the Kinks version first and then the Van Halen version, which is how, you know, people who are familiar with the Kinks in the 60s would have gone through that. Unlike me, I heard the Van Halen version first and the Kinks version later. So it was interesting to get the point of view of someone who's 15 or 16 now, hearing the Kinks version and then being introduced to the Van Halen version. Because both of those are now older than they are.
Right. But, much older.
Their reaction in every case was just, wow, these are so different. And now I've recently been teaching the Van Halen version to my group of 6 to 12-year-olds. So I have these, I think there's a 10-year-old guitar player who's playing the Van Halen guitar solo from You Really Got Me. And it's just wild seeing these kids' response to both the Kinks and the Van Halen version of the song.
I think it's one of those urban legends too, and I don't know if this is actually true, and I think that Ray kind of perpetuates this, because I think he said something about this when we saw him and he was talking about all the makings of some of their hits during the Storyteller tour. But there's if you listen to, I think it's You Really Got Me, right? It's not All Day or All the Night, but right in the solo part, like, you can hear Dave say fuck off, because he's like yelling at his brother, especially with like today's technology, when you listen to the if you're really careful, you can like hear him cussing at his brother. So
that is funny.
But that's, you know what, I have not compared. I know that there's, you know, that they exist, but I've never really done a side-by-side comparison with You Really Got Me as far as Van Halen and the original Kinks song. So I'm surprised that the lyrics are different, or at least the order of them are
different. Well, Van Halen didn't go back and listen to songs before they recorded them.
I see.
They just sort of do them however they did them in the studio. And I can't speak for musicians in general, but I can say that in teaching at the School of Rock, I have learned that every song I know incorrectly. Yeah. I have to go back and learn it correctly before I teach it to these kids. And I'm shocked at how wrong I have been playing these songs. And if you think about it, now, today, you can jump on YouTube and watch 20 different videos on how to play a song on guitar. You can look up tablature. You can look up music. You can look up lyrics.
If you just want to hear the song, you just pull it up immediately.
Right. And when I was learning these songs, you had to find a copy and learn it by listening to it. So a lot of times you're not going to be right. You don't have somebody else sitting there helping you like a YouTube video would do now. And you certainly don't have 20 different opinions on how something is done. If you go back to the 70s when Van Halen was covering these songs, it was a similar thing. You know, you'd have to buy the record and listen to the record over and over trying to learn these parts.
And then just kind of guessing and hoping you're getting it right.
Right. And as a band, we would get to a point where we'd think, okay, this sounds good, not this sounds right. You know, it doesn't really matter if it's right or wrong if everybody in the band is playing it together and it sounds good.
It's more about the spirit of the song than the specific parts.
So especially in the 70s, I would imagine that Van Halen probably learned the song when they were playing backyard parties, and they probably spent, you know, 10 minutes learning it and then 4 years playing it and developing it before they ever recorded it for their first album.
Yeah, subtle changes.
Oh, sure. Of course.
And kind of knowing what I know about Diamond Dave and Eddie, well, they never came to blows like Ray and Dave did, but I could see where they, you know, would think that they were improving everything that they were part of anyway.
Yeah. Well, I certainly don't think that Dave would have taken the time to make sure and fact-check all of the lyrics.
No, no. Dave's like, oh, we're doing it my way. So
he's probably like, good enough.
My way is the best way. Diamond Dave's way is the best way. Yeah. So, well, very cool. Well, I think that kind of wraps up our spotlight here on the Kinks. Any last words about the band? I guess we'll start with you, Bambi.
No, I feel like I'm kind of worthless with this one. I know you really got me really well. Well, Van Halen version.
Actually, you probably know our version.
Yes,
really
that's true.
Well,
that's true.
Not the Van Halen version.
That is
so
true.
Just don't tell the record company. It's okay.
Yeah, I know. We're gonna get sued because you mentioned it on this podcast. Yeah. Now the record company's gonna come after us.
All those parts just kind of
pull out. Notice I didn't mention the record label by name.
Yeah. Yes, thank you for that. That might save us. Ricky, what about you? Landing last words on the Kinks.
The only thing that I want to say, and I said this earlier, it's just really amazing to me that they were able to shift styles so well from album to album, from song to song. And it's making me want to go back and just start at the beginning and listen through everything just to hear that progression all at once.
Absolutely. And I'm rediscovering them as well now, and it's an amazing journey to take. I can definitely encourage people to do that. Michelle?
I would just kind of point people, if they're interested, to a Ray Davies solo album. My knowledge of the Kinks is scattered singles, but Ray did an album called Return to Waterloo. When was that? Was that late 80s? And I actually heard that as an album and thought it was absolutely brilliant
because it was based on a movie that he was heavily involved with. Mm-hmm. And it is really good. It's a great album. It's probably my favorite of his solo work. Mike?
For me, it probably has to be, like, you know, I've been saying the early 70s stuff, you know, the stuff with Lola, or, you know, like you had mentioned also, you know, Everyone in Showbiz. Those are just two amazing albums. and you'll know a lot of the songs on those. And it's just, it is awesome to be able to hear, you know, the progression of the band through this, and then, you know, pick up one of their 80s, you know, CDs, or play some YouTube videos. You know, it's always great. And to get to see them live, because there are concerts up there of them doing live performances, and you might even see a punch or two. So it's pretty awesome.
I really, Mike, I can't help but think, you know, I know it's the hippie in you or whatever, but I think Village Green Preservation Society, Muswell Hillbillies, these are like songs that are right in your wheelhouse. Those were done in the late 60s. So I can imagine that would be right in your wheelhouse.
Oh yeah.
Well, I love their stuff from the 60s. You can get a lot of their greatest hits out there, and that is a great way to experience a lot of their material, especially from the 60s. And then scattered throughout the 70s and 80s. I still listen to UK Jive. I definitely recommend that one if you want to just try out some later Kinks. It's their second to last album that they did. It was done during the Thatcher era of Britain. So it's Ray and Dave in particular expressing their feelings about Thatcher-run Britain. And I really wish that they were together as a group, and because I can only imagine what kind of material they would write about Brexit. They could make a whole album out of that. It would be amazing, I think. I kind of miss them from that, but I'm kind of curious to see what they come up with next. So if there is another album, I hope we get to that. I doubt they'll tour together anyway. I just don't think that's probably in the cards. But if you get a chance to see either one of them live, do it. Because that's worth it. So, well, very cool. Well, that's it for the Kinks, our spotlight of this. I think our last music spotlight of the year.
Oh, yeah.
So thanks, guys. And we will be right back. I don't know what's coming up next. Are we closing out the show?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so we will be right back, and we'll close out the show.
And that's how we're going to end it.
They put a parking lot on a piece of land where the supermarket used to stand. Before that, they put up
a... Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week, this Geek Girl is talking about Disney+. Now, I know many people at least have one Disney show or movie they love, even if they aren't into princesses or talking animals. So Disney Plus being released is a big deal because Star Wars live action shows, the entire Disney library, plus National Geographic, ESPN, and The Simpsons, and many other things to watch. We may not see some of our friends ever again. We'll find their skeletons wearing mouse ears and sitting next to frozen pizzas in their armchairs years later. But, I mean, is that really a bad way to go? Watching Tron, Robin Hood, and The Mandalorian, as well as many other shows on nonstop binge? I am pumped to get to watch many of the Disney films that I have not seen in years, because most of the ones I own are on VHS, and my VHS player is a bit moody and occasionally works and occasionally doesn't. I am also really excited for Star Wars shows, like live-action Star Wars shows, not just animated ones, and being able to also re-watch many of the animated shows that we've had in the previous years. And also to see the Lady and the Tramp live-action movie, and see if it'll be amazing or if it'll give me nightmares. We shall see. Also, the promise of an Obi-Wan and Loki show or movie. Yeah, I need those in my life. So I'm excited for all this new streaming service stuff, even though I need companies to stop with the streaming services already, because my wallet can't handle it anymore. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. Let's thank our guests for being here. Ricky and Bambi, thank you guys so, so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It was an ordeal to get here, but we made it. If you guys only knew what happened behind the scenes. If you guys only knew. Anything you guys want to promote?
I'm just glad that they're so technically, like, you know, marvelous that they can join us.
Hey, you know, it's not me.
Mikey, you are so sucking up. Come on, you know. Do you guys have anything you want to shout out about or promote?
Yeah. You go, Ricky.
I got nothing.
Yeah, I know. We're going to Texas this week, but the show will, you know, air, and we'll probably have already gone. So there we go.
Well, do you guys have a website? Do you guys have a place where people can find about Radio Cult?
RadioCult.com, Facebook, stuff like that. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Address?
Yeah, it's Radio Cult. Well, if you just search Radio Cult on Facebook, you'll see our logo. Hopefully we're the, well, there's a radio station in like Brazil or something like that that is now calling themselves Radio Cult, so that's interesting. So there's two Radio Cults on Facebook now, but we're the one that's the band that's
you can check us out on MySpace.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, MySpace. Wait,
MySpace is still around?
I know, right?
Wow. It is. Sometimes I go there when I want to be alone.
Oh, that is awesome. Michelle, thank you so much for being here and joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
You want any musical stuff you want to shout out about or anything?
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Vote for Pat Benatar. Vote for Todd Rundgren. Vote for Judas Priest.
Yeah. Dave Matthews is actually catching up with
they've overtaken her. Dave Matthews has been in the lead for about a week or so now.
Yep.
Wow. Oh, wow.
And it looks like they're running away with it. So, but, you know.
But Dave Matthews is a new band.
No, not really.
Not really.
If you think about it, this is going to make you feel old. Their first album came out over 25 years ago.
Yeah, otherwise they would be nominated. It's still the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's, you know, some people consider Dave Matthews classic rock, so come on. I know. I'm just saying. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Michelle, for everything you do for the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
And Mr. Mike, we made it through another one finally.
We did, and as always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about?
I do. We had Michelle and I had the privilege of being in Charlotte this past weekend to we went to a concert for the basically the 25th anniversary of Intrepid Artist International, which is a booking agency for mainly blues bands around the country. They cover such artists as one that you've heard me talk about a lot, which is Davy Knowles, the Empire Strikes Brass Band. They had Kenny Neal who performed that we saw, and many others. They mainly focus on blues, and it's some really, really good music. And it's just one of those cases where, like, blues music, like so many other things, this in these days is not something that I think is being maybe appreciated as much as a lot of other things in this current environment that we're in. So I give them a lot of credit for supporting blues artists, young and old. And if you get a chance to just go to their website, intrepidartist.com, you'll see a lot of the artists that they represent. And if one of them is coming to your area, check them out, because based on the concert that we saw, it won't be a bad night. It won't be a bad night at all. They had some really talented people playing that night that we had never seen. We saw them for the first time, and a lot of them just blew us away.
Yes, for sure.
That's pretty darn awesome. It's cool when you can go see and be moved by music like that. And that's the wonderful thing about going to see live music.
Absolutely. It's so different. Awesome. Like one guy was doing Chicago blues. That was Toronto Cannon. Another guy, Kenny Neal, was doing Louisiana blues. course, Davey does a sort of more guitar-based blues. He comes from England. They have a lot of different other kind of styles. So there's not just like, it's not just like blues isn't just like one set thing. I mean, there's a lot of different variations of it. And they were, like I said, they were all represented that night. And it was really amazing.
That's pretty fantastic. And, you know, it's just great when you get to see that live and just be just like, wow. And, you know, it's always, you know, this might as well be my shout out, you know, going to see live music, going to see live performances, going to see, you know, small bands to huge monster bands, to seeing really big venues to these small little, maybe 100 people seeing a show. And it's just awesome. If you ever get a chance to see live music, and, you know, concerts are getting, you know, fairly expensive nowadays. You know, they're already starting to put out like the list of shows coming for this next, you know, for 2020. And, you know, they just like announced Ringo and his all-star band. You know, I would love to go see Ringo Starr, but I'm not going to pay a minimum of $85 and then service charges to go see, you know, a concert. And, you know, there's certain ones I'll go see because, you know, it's bucket list type people. But it's just not like, you know, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, it's not everyday type of money and such. But, you know, if you get a chance to go see someone like Radio Cult, people who are trying to make a living at doing this, starting up and, you know, just having fun doing it, you know, not that these big people don't have fun doing it, but, you know, these guys are, I hate to say it, starving artists. And it's just awesome. Get a chance, support local.
It's awesome that we're starving artists.
it's awesome that people can go see you guys. So that way you got, as you guys are starving artists, it should have been a comma in that part there. So, but yeah, it's awesome that you guys are starving. It makes you guys want to perform even more. That's right.
Yeah, that's some support right there.
Mm-hmm. That's right. They just got the Mike Faber seal of approval. And with that, we are wrapping up tonight's episode. Thank you guys so much. We're going to be back again next week, and it's going to be a weird one. It's just going to be me and Mike for the whole episode. That's right. Just talking and chatting and, you know, just, you never know where we're going to go. It just should be a lot of fun. So until then, my name is Mike Faber, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. And support starving artists like Bambi and Ricky. It's awesome. They need food. They need food.
Buy them some Taco Bell.
They love Taco Bell. And we're done. You've been listening to the Earth Station One podcast, a show by fans for fans. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe to our show up on iTunes or wherever fine podcasts are found. While you're up there, please rate us and remember to leave feedback. It would greatly be appreciated. And remember to tell your friends all about us while you're at it. Earth Station One is available on most social media sites where you can join some really great topics or chats. Help support our show by shopping through our Amazon.com link or purchasing very cool ESO Network clothing and merchandise at our TeePublic store. Links to both are found on the top of our ESO Network webpage. Become a patron of the ESO Network by backing us up on Patreon for as little as 25 cents a week. Go to patreon.com/ESO Network to sign up. We want to hear from you. Please write us at earthstation1@esonetwork.com or call us at 404-963-9057. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace, and we're done.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.